Welcome to Screen Space 20, Usability and Usability Testing 101, Part 6, Analyzing and Utilizing the Results. Welcome to Screen Space, your podcast about creating usable, accessible, effective and efficient web, blog, and digital media design for the everyday and non-expert designer. This is episode 20 of Screen Space, Usability and Usability Testing 101, Part 6, Analyzing and Utilizing the Results. In this episode, I discuss what to do with the findings we gathered during the usability testing in episode 5. I will talk about collating the data, analyzing the findings, and utilizing the findings. While I love all parts of usability testing, I find these last steps, analyzing the data and utilizing the data, to be the most exciting. I love figuring out what the data tells me about the design and coming up with ways to solve the usability problems and redesign a stronger, more usable site or product. If you've not listened to the previous parts of this series, you may want to go back and listen. I suggest starting with Screen Space 10 on user-centered design and then working your way through the series. In the first part of the series, Screen Space 11, Usability and Usability Testing 101, I discuss usability, provide a definition of usability testing, and outline the steps to conduct a usability test. In Part 2, Episode 12, you can find information on selecting your users for usability testing. In Part 3, Episode 17, I discuss the steps to setting objectives and selecting tasks to test. In Part 4, Episode 18, I provide information on getting ready to do the testing. And finally, in Screen Space 19, Usability and Usability Testing 101, Part 5, Conducting the Testing, I cover what to do before, during, and after the usability testing. I am your host, Dr. Jennifer L. Bowie. I conduct research and have taught in areas related to digital media, web, and blog design. Previously, I mentioned being an assistant professor at Georgia State University. However, this is no longer the case, and I am currently looking for a job in usability, user-centered design, and or social media. Stay tuned, and I'll provide details at the end of this podcast. A warm greeting to my new listeners from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, Rabat, Morocco, and Utrecht, Netherlands. My apologies for any mispronouncing in your city names. I love having you here. I also want to thank my many listeners in Wisconsin who stopped by this past month. Your listens and blog visits moved Wisconsin up to second place based on traffic for the last 4 weeks. Keep coming back and you may catch New York, which ranks second for the past year. Georgia, my home sweet home, ranks first, both for the past month and past year. Thanks to all of you for visiting. Come on back, you hear? In this episode, I present the sixth step in usability testing, analyzing and utilizing the results. This includes three steps, collating the data into findings, analyzing the findings, and utilizing these findings. I'll use the same example I used in episodes 11 and 12, 17, 18, and 19, testing a photography blog. Well, imagine you have a photography blog with a decent-sized audience. We'll want to get more users and see how usable the blog is for current users. By this point in the series, we have figured out which user profiles we will test in Part 2. We have designed the testing in Part 3. We have prepared for testing in Part 4, and we have conducted our testing in Part 5. So, on that note, let's begin discussing, analyzing, and utilizing the results from usability testing. Collate the data into findings. First, we'll want to collate the data into findings. In usability testing, we often have two types of data, qualitative and quantitative. The qualitative data is not numerical data. It is data that's not quantified, is left up to interpretive techniques, and is often subjective. In usability testing, this will be data from observations, user statements during and after the testing, like those obtained from ThinkAloud protocol, user expressions, the interview answers, and some of the survey answers. Quantitative data is our numerical data, or data that is quantified and based on objective properties. In usability testing, this will include the amount of time it took users to complete tasks, number of clicks, errors, successes, and other things we can count. Some of our qualitative data may become quantitative if we code it and end up quantifying the codes in some ways, like count the number of positive remarks, for instance. There's a debate in various arenas, often involving academics and researchers of various sorts, as to whether objective data is truly objective. I will leave the debate for other forums and only note that exists here. For now, let's begin by exploring some qualitative data analysis methods. Qualitative data. For usability testing, often coding is the best method of data analysis for our qualitative data. To code our data, we organize and interpret it. While there are many different ways to do this, I recommend two basic approaches. The first is a top-down approach. With this approach, you predetermine categories and go through your data looking for hits or items that fall into this category. Let me give you two examples. Example one, you're analyzing the user's opinions of the site design from interview data and you have three categories, positive, negative, and neutral. You will then rate each statement or parts of each statement as one of these. If a user said, I like the layout and the site colors, but there needs to be more white space, you would put the layout and colors in the positive category and the lack of white space in the negative category. This single sentence gives you three data hits. Example two. You are analyzing your observations of the testing and users think aloud protocol. You have three categories, navigation, content, and design. For one task, the user clicks on several different navigation links to find a particular page and is quite frustrated. You account this as a navigation problem, or possibly several navigation problems, depending on how you code, and add the data to your navigation category. One problem with the top-down approach is that you may miss other areas that you did not make into a category. To use a common saying in the US, if all you have is a hammer, every problem begins to look like a nail. So you may classify problems as nails where they might be screws or something that's not in your navigation content or design category. Perhaps you have terminology, which would maybe fall in content, but possibly be its own category too. In addition, your categories may be based on your biases and not the real areas that your results reveal. The second qualitative data analysis approach is, surprisingly enough, perhaps bottom-up. In this approach, you do not predetermine your categories. Instead, you create your categories during the data analysis stage. You go through your data looking for themes, and these themes become your categories. If you note several navigation problems, then navigation may become a category. This method has greater flexibility than the top-down approach, and it allows you to shape your findings based on data and not preconceived thoughts on the data. However, it is more subjective and can result in many teeny little categories. In my own analysis of qualitative data, I tend to combine approaches. I start with top-down, but I'm open to new categories as the data develops and will add as needed. I will also go back through my data once I'm done and merge or divide categories as needed. This approach allows me to work with the strengths of both methods. For any of these three approaches, let me recommend using an affinity diagram to aid in analysis. The affinity diagram is often used in business for analysis within project management. It's been adopted by contextual design and works well in usability testing too, or any qualitative analysis. I'll stick a link to some pictures of affinity diagrams so you can see what they look like in the show notes. What you need for affinity diagramming is note cards, post-it notes, smallish scraps of paper, or something similar to write on that you can easily move around, and then something to write with, and space, lots of floor space or a wall. I recommend post-it notes and a big empty wall. For simplicity, I'll use post-it notes on my wall in my further explanation of affinity diagramming. Take each data point, each observation, comment, facial expression, or whatever, and write it on a post-it note. Make sure you write out everything you're going to analyze on the post-it notes before you begin analysis. Your approach, top-down, bottom-up, or mixed, impacts what you do next. If you're using a top-down, then also write out each category on a larger post-it note or in a different color or something to show that it's a category. Maybe put lots of gold stars around it. Then put each category post-it note on the wall, equally spaced apart. I put the categories near the top of the wall, but within easy reach. Next, take each post-it note and decide which category it fits in. Put the post-it note under the category heading. Just stick it to the wall. Keep going until all your post-it notes are posted somewhere on the wall under a category. Then, go back and review the post-it notes to make sure they're correctly placed. Then, you're done. If you are doing a bottom-up approach, you obviously do not start by putting up the categories because you haven't determined them yet. Instead, you'll create the categories during the affinity diagram process. Take your first note and place it on the wall. Then, read each post-it note and figure out where it goes. Does it fit with your first note? If so, put it on the wall near the first note. Does it fit another note on the wall? If so, put it near that note. If not, put it in a new location on the wall. Keep finding the right place for each post-it note until you run out. Then, review the clusters you have developed. See if anything no longer fits and move it as needed. I have found that often my clusters change during the process, and a note that worked in the beginning may not work at the end. Then, once you've confirmed the locations of each note, develop category names for each cluster you've developed. Write this out on a larger post-it note in another color, or in some way to show its category, like I talked about before, gold stars, something. Place this above each cluster, and there you have your categories and your data for each category. If you are combining top-down and bottom-up, then start by placing your predetermined categories. Determine if each post-it note fits in one of these categories. If it does not, apply the bottom-up approach and start a new cluster. When you are done, give each new cluster its own category title and review each area to make sure everything fits. Once you're done with any of these three approaches, record this sorting, perhaps with a picture, take a camera picture of it or several, notes, or even leave it up until you're done with the analysis reporting and redesign. Quantitative data. For quantitative data, data analysis often involves math and statistics. But don't worry, you can analyze the data with minimal math skills as long as you have access to a spreadsheet program like Excel or Google Spreadsheet. Enter data into the spreadsheet and use spreadsheet functions to determine some basic statistics for the data. The average or mean is a good place to start. Find out what the average time was for each task, for example. So enter in all the times and then use the spreadsheet functions to find out what the average was. You may also find mode, which is the most frequently occurring number, such as time, and medium, the number that separates the top half of the sample from the bottom half, the middle number in an odd sample, or the average of two middle values in an even sample, valuable. So you may find the mode and medium valuable. The range of times, the difference between the longest and shortest time, may also be helpful. You may apply more advanced statistics to your data, but these easy-to-perform functions give you plenty of data to work with. You may also want to review your data using tables and graphs, which you can easily create in many spreadsheet programs. Pie charts are good for percentages. Possibly you could use them for the percentages of your users and the various experience levels you asked about in your pretesting survey, if you had one. Use these various methods to determine your time, errors and successes, and any other quantitative data you collected. I suggest examining the findings, like average time, for each user, user profile, and task as appropriate, along with all your users for each task in general. You may discover additional information that will help you analyze the findings. Perhaps you discover by looking at each user's average times that one user took an average of 50% longer on all tasks. Perhaps one group of users was more successful completing tasks and another group less so. You could then try to figure out why these things are happening. Perhaps the slower user had less experience and the more successful user group is female. So how can you redesign the site for less experienced users, for male users? This leads to our next section, analyzing the findings. Analyze the findings. Once you have the data categorized, statistically analyzed, and otherwise ready to go, it is time to analyze what this all means. You know that your users took 5 minutes to find a particular photo on the photography blog, but what does that mean? You know users were only 45% successful on ordering a photograph. What does this mean? Well, this does mean that your users are taking too long to find a particular photo and are not very successful purchasing things, and thus your site likely needs some major redesign. But we can come up with much more helpful results. Go through your findings and figure out where there are problems and where there are strengths. Take note of the strengths, but put them aside for now. Make a table with 5 columns and 1 more row than problems you found. Label the first column problems, the second cause, the third scope, the fourth severity, and the fifth recommendations and changes. I'll put an example of this as a link in the transcript. List all the problems you uncovered in the first column of your table, 1 per row. For the photography blog, let's say we have the 3 aforementioned problems: lack of white space in the design, takes too long to find a particular photo, and low success rate on purchases. Likely you will have many more problems than this, but three makes a good example. Next, determine the cause of each problem and write it in the next column, the same row as the problem. Sometimes the cause will be part of the problem. For the lack of white space, the cause is lack of white space. Easy enough. For the problem of it taking too long to find a particular photo, you may need to go back and look through the qualitative results to figure this out. Possibly your photographs are not labeled or tagged well. Possibly your search engine is poor. Let's say you discover this is a tagging problem from your analysis of the qualitative data. For the low success rate on purchases, you may discern two causes: poorly written instructions for purchases and too many pages required for purchase. Next, determine the scope of each problem. Is this a global problem, one that impacts the whole site? Or is this a local problem, one that just impacts a very small part of your site, like a single page? For the white space problem, this has global scope as it impacts the whole site. For the photo finding problem, this impacts only part of the site, but it is a fairly large part, so let's call this moderate scope. The low success rate, making purchases, are a more local result, as it results only to the purchasing. Next, determine the severity of the problem. How serious is this problem? The white space is not a very serious problem. It impacts the aesthetics, and as you did not see this impact times or success rates, you may give this a low severity. Finding particular photos on the site is fairly important to the goals of the site, so you may rate this as high or medium. Purchasing successfully is very important to your goal of making some money with the site, so let's give it a high severity. Finally, you figure out how to solve these problems. What changes can be made to fix these problems? What recommendations do you have? For the white space, the solution is fairly obvious. Add more white space. Your recommendation could be a site redesign with 30% white space and 70% non-white space. Since tagging was the issue finding photos, the solution could be to tag each photo more accurately and to use more tags in general. For the purchasing problem, you found two causes: poorly written instructions and too many pages. Your recommendations could be rewriting the instructions for clarity and cleaning up the purchasing process to involve fewer and shorter pages of step. I have recorded all of this in a table in the transcript and put a link in the transcript to a PDF of the table, so please check it out. Utilize the findings. Next, we utilize these findings. Once you've determined the cause, scope, severity, and recommendations and changes for each problem, next determine what changes should be made. Look particularly at the scope and severity. Problems with a broad scope and high severity should receive redesign preference, and those with a small scope and low severity should get less of a preference. If you can redesign everything, then do so. That's the best choice. If not, then separate the recommendations into three groups based on priority: must do, should do, and would like to do, or you could call this bonus or extra. Put all the recommendations related to high scope and high severity problems in the must do list, or your highest priority list. Put the recommendations for problems with moderate scope and severity in the should do or second priority list. Then problems with low severity and small scope would go in the would like to do list, or lowest priority list. Problems with mixed scope and severity need to be considered before they are placed. For the white space problem with a global scope but low severity, we may choose to put this in the must-do list or the should-do list. Think about what is more important, severity or scope. What is more important for that problem? Think about how serious this problem is. You may also consider effort. If the solutions take a lot of effort, you may want to focus on solutions ranked similarly that take less effort, as this is a high-effort solution. For our three problems, I would put the white space on the should-do list due to the huge effort in low severity, the poor tagging on the should-do list due to the moderate scope and severity rating I received, and the two solutions to the purchasing problems in the must-do list due to the seriousness of purchasing and the high severity. Your next step depends on your situation. Did you just usability test your own site, blog, or media? If so, make your list into a redesign plan, beginning with the must-do list, then the should-do list, and finally the would-like-to-do list. Then start redesigning. Do look to see if any solutions overlap. In our case, the site redesign for more white space overlaps with the redesign of the purchasing steps, so we may do these together. Make sure you leave the strengths of the design in the redesign. Once you have a redesign, I recommend testing this new design to see how well it works. Use the same tasks and user profile as before to make sure you made it usable for these users and tasks. Go back to ScreenSpace 19, Usability and Usability Testing 101 Part 5, Conducting the Testing, and test the redesign. If you're doing the usability testing for somebody else, your next step is to report on the findings. You can do this in written form, in a usability report, for instance, or possibly as a presentation. I'll link to a detailed outline of one possible usability report in the transcript that you can follow if you need to. I do recommend the three lists, the must do, the should do, and the would like to do, although you may want to name them something more professional, like priority 1, priority 2, and priority 3. And that is what you need to do to analyze and utilize the results from usability testing. Let's review. First, you collate the data into findings. Use top-down, bottom-up, or a mixed approach for collating qualitative findings, and you use basic statistics for quantitative findings. Second, you analyze these findings. Figure out what the problems are and then determine the cause, scope, severity, and recommendations or changes for each. Finally, we utilize these findings. We apply them. We sort out the recommendations into three levels of priority and either make the changes ourselves or report the findings with a list of recommendations to someone else. Then we test our redesign and see how good we just made it. And that concludes both Usability Testing 101 Part 6, Analyzing and Utilizing the Results, and the Usability and Usability Testing 101 series. Join me next week for an episode not on usability testing. Next week, I will focus on the importance of analyzing audience purpose and context for your website, blog, or digital media. As I mentioned in the intro to the podcast, I am looking for a job. As my loyal listeners may be able to guess, I'm interested in position in usability, user-centered design, and or social media, or another academic position teaching in these areas. My preference is in the Atlanta area or telecommuting, though I may consider locations somewhat nearby. If you're interested in my skills or know someone who is, please contact me at jbowie@screenspace.org and check out my portfolio at www.screenspace.org/port, P-O-R-T. If you have questions, comments, or thoughts on what you want me to cover, please send me an email at jbowie@screenspace.org or check out the ScreenSpace blog, www.screenspace.org. You can also follow screen_space on Twitter for hints, tips, advice, news, and information on designing websites, blogs, and other digital media texts. Also, check out the blog for a transcript of this podcast complete with links and resources. If you enjoyed this podcast, please put up a review on iTunes or tell your readers and listeners via your blog, podcast, tweet, or the social media of your choice. Have fun and design well. ScreenSpace is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. Don't change the podcast, do give me and ScreenSpace credit, and don't make any money off of it. ScreenSpace's opening music today is African Dance by Yappa Ye off the Headroom Project, and the closing music is Survival by Beth Quist off Shall We Dance. Both selections are available from Magnatune.